You know, so as I grew up, you would think with all this knowledge of growing up in alcoholic homes and, you know, going to Alateen and going to Al-Anon, the last thing I would do in life would be to marry an alcoholic, and I have married two. The first one I met when we were in Alateen. We actually dated when we were in Alateen. Yes, that happens. Okay. And, you know, I never went out for two or three dates, okay? Usually, what was the joke this morning? What does an Al-Anon bring to the second date? You know, a U-Haul? I would wear my tux on the first date, okay? Hi, would you like to get married? You know, because that's we're just looking for someone else to take care of us. If you get me out of here, did you do that too, Richard? I'm sorry. Okay. You know, we're looking, please get me out of a really bad situation. Rescue me. Or we go and find them and go, you know, I can rescue you. Let's rescue each other. Yeah, this will work. You know. In the interim, and my mom laughs about this all the time, you know, I started with the Explorer Scout program. I don't know if you have anything like that up here when I was 17 years old. And I figured out pretty quickly that this is what I wanted to do for a living. I was one of those very fortunate individuals that knew at 17 years old what I wanted to do for a career. And when I started moving in that direction of law enforcement, you know, it just all fell into place. That's how I know, you know, when God's will is there, because by all accounts, I should have not have been hired. Okay, I had a little bit of a record as a kid, a little bit of violence issues. Oh, yeah, that's the guy you want carrying a gun, right? I am happy to tell you that I've carried a gun pretty much every day of my life for the last 30 years, and I have not shot anybody in anger. Now, that may not impress you, but that impresses me to tears, because I get pretty damn angry on the freeways down in L.A., I'll tell you what. You know, it's one of those things that when I started down that road, my mom sat there and said, let me see if I can paint a picture for you here. You're the child of two alcoholics. You grew up in a situation where you manipulate everything that you could. You have a great deal of control issues. I can't imagine why you became a cop. But I am here to tell you that I am every alcoholic's worst nightmare. I'm an Al-Anon with a badge and a gun. One of my most favorite jobs in the sheriff's department down there was when I worked at Carson Station, and I wanted to go back to a certain shift. I wanted to go back to the graveyard shift because I'm one of those wackies that loves working at night, because that's when the fun's at, right? More drama. And they said, well, the only car we have available to you to work is the city drunk car. Oh, yeah, bring that to me. What do you need me to do? We want you to bring at least four drunks a night to jail. Done. Now, we have a ride-along program down there where civilians can come out and ride with us. I was amazed how many Al-Anons suddenly wanted to go out on a ride-along with me. There was a lot of tears shed in that front seat. I think there was a lot of unknown fifth steps done in that front seat when we're taking Johnny Drunk to jail in the back there. And, of course, I would be as professional as I could, and I would always drive them by the Alano Club down in Sepulveda, and I go, and here's where the judge will be sending you. They'll have to sign your court card. I can't. You know, and, you know, the thing about all that is, again, back, you know, back with the control issues and all those things that came up in my life. You know, when my first wife and I started dating, you know, we dated again for about, it was almost a year and a half. And that broke up. And what I didn't know was it broke up was because she was using and she was drinking and she knew that I was going to find out. She managed to keep that from me. We didn't live near each other. I lived in L.A. She lived in Orange County. If we saw each other once a week, that was a good week. And she would just do what she was doing the other five, 6 nights of the week. So when it was getting too close and I was going to find out, she did what a lot of us do. She cut it off because it wasn't worth getting found out. And 3 or 4 years later, when she got sober, and I had no idea, and we actually, you know, touched base again and, you know, figured out that we were still in love and, you know, she made amends for stuff, and I'm like, I'm just happy you're still here because no one ever comes back. And we wound up getting married. And, you know, of course, she had, at that time was sober. She had been sober for almost 9 years when we got married. And, you know, she was one of those that got sober very young at 19 years old. And the old-timers used to sit in the meetings, and I watched this happen where they come up and they go, you're sober? I spilled more than you drank. And she would always go, then you're a sloppy drunk. And, you know, and this was the type of sarcasm that we had in the house. And you know what? That didn't work out. And there's no terrible story to tell. There's no good guys, there's no bad guys, as the old song goes. It was just difficult for her to put up with what I did for a living. And God bless her, because being married to us is more difficult than what we do. It's probably like dealing with a drunk a lot. And, you know, that marriage didn't work. You know, and that was, as I talked about this morning when I was going through that, because quite honestly, I've never been through anything, even the alcoholics getting sober, I've never been through anything that was more physically, spiritually, emotionally, and financially draining than that divorce. It affected every aspect of my life to where I would sit in meetings and I would just cry. Again, until Martha set me straight. And if you weren't in the room this morning, what happened was, is when I was back in that Covina meeting, after everyone stopped getting pissed off at the drunks in the next room, I was belly aching again about my divorce. And this 80-year-old knitter in the back of the room, Martha, smiled sweetly and she said, "Jerry, I'm just so tired of hearing about you bitching about this. You've been crying about this for 6 months. Girls, who else have been divorced?" And most of the hands went up in the room. And I went, "Oh, duh. I'm not different. These people, if I would listen to them instead of belly aching, could probably help me. But I'm too busy being concerned about how I feel right now." And isn't that how a lot of us come in? About 3 years after I got divorced, after I got past woman-hater stage, you know, and then I went out on a date. Now, those of you who raised your hand this morning, did you also have this romantic notion about what dating was like? And then when I did it 15 years later, I went, "Oh, yuck. This is horrible. You know, I'm 35 years old. This still sucks, you know." And, you know, I was in my Sunday morning meeting, and this is a woman in there who was sponsoring my future wife, my last wife, Stephanie. And, you know, she said, "Jerry's single." "Yeah." "He's cute." "Eh." "He's funny." "Eh, he can be." Why don't you guys see if you hook up?" "No, he's a cop." Now, she had worked at the courts, so she knew what kind of dogs we were. And I'm here to tell you, it's a well-earned reputation. Okay? I work with some of the biggest dogs I have ever seen in my life. I look at some of the drama they put themselves through, some of these kids and their kids, and I go, "Why are you signing up for this?" But okay, you got to learn. Hopefully you have some of your retirement left by the time that you get there and you learn. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, don't believe the press. You know, and so I remember when someone said, "Yeah, she thinks you're nice and all that. She might want to go out with you, but she doesn't date cops." You know, and then I went, "Oh, wait a minute. I wasn't that interested till she said no." Okay. So, of course, I kind of saunter up and, "Hi, how are you?" You know, get the radio voice going. "And where else do you go to meetings?" "Well, I go to this meeting in Norma Lindo." "Oh, I know the meeting very well. Never been there a day in my life." Program of rigorous self-honesty, right? Okay, so I went to the meeting that night. And after that meeting, we went to Kelly's for coffee over in the Brea Mall. And we have been together almost every day since. You know, and we take our time with things before we make moves in Al-Anon, right? So when she came to visit, that was in September. We officially started dating in October. Christmas, she came to visit, and she never left. You know, because we do things with a lot of planning. You know, we don't do anything spur of the moment. And, you know, and then after a year or two of dating, you know, it was like, "All right, well, are you going to ask me to marry you soon?" "Well, yes, I will ask this year, because you must plan these things out." You know, and God relieved me of that fear again. You know, I remember she wasn't trying to push things, but she told me on the second date, "I think I love you." And she said, "I knew that you didn't run screaming southbound, so there was a possibility." And I remember my answer wasn't the most romantic. It was like, "Please let me catch up." You know, and she hung out until I finally caught up. And, you know, God bless her. She is the most caring, loving, trusting individual. And she came out of a horrible marriage, you know. And we decided that it wasn't just enough to get married, so let's buy a house at the same time. So let's add a little bit of stress onto that. And so we did that. And actually, it got pulled off pretty well. Again, God's will. It's like, yeah, it worked. We didn't have to play a lot of games to get things to go, and it wasn't that stressful, so it worked. And you know, we knew immediately that we wanted to have kids, so we spent the next 2 years trying to have children because, you know, when we got married, I was 40 and she was 38, and, you know, if you've never heard a man say a clock was ticking, didn't have any children in my first marriage, neither did she. We wanted more than anything to be parents. I never thought I would ever have that opportunity to be a daddy. I just knew I would like to try. I didn't know what type of daddy I was going to be. I didn't know if I was going to be like my dad. I didn't know if I was going to be like his. But I knew I wanted to try. But we were having trouble getting pregnant. You know, nothing's better for a man's ego than not being able to get his wife pregnant. Especially then when you have to go see doctors, specialists, cups, turkey basters. How much do you really want to be a daddy? I really want to be a daddy. What I also noticed was that my wife was starting to show signs and symptoms of problem drinking. I noticed she had no middle. There was no stopping from the first glass of whatever it was to the bottle. Now, I've been very fortunate. Given, you know, my upbringing with, you know, two alcoholic parents and all the wonderful alcoholic modeling around me, given the fact that I'm a perfectionist, given the fact of what I do for a living, as my sponsor used to say, because he was a double winner, he said, we're not saving you a chair, we're saving you a couch. And to this point, I have been fortunate enough where that has not happened. I am not arrogant enough to sit up before you and tell you that will never happen at 51 years old. It may. If that ever does, I know where I need to go. I've had a lot of good people show me the way. And that would be not great, but at least I would have some place to go. I know that for my wife, she did a lot of her drinking when I was not home. I worked the PM shift, 2 o'clock in the afternoon until midnight. She was what I refer to as a Maybelline drunk because she never left the house. You know, she was that father's knows best, get dressed up nice at the home, and then once I went to work, she would start drinking. She drank at home because she was afraid to go out to bars or anything like that because, one, that wasn't in her nature, and, two, she was terrified of some other local agency arresting her and them having to call her husband to come get her out of jail. See, because my wife having 17 years of Al-Anon is that rare alcoholic that actually gives a crap about other people. And she still has that in her today. It's funny when we're having a discussion, I have to sometimes go, am I talking to my alcoholic wife or my Al-Anon wife? You know, because I have to gauge what's going on. And, you know, I remember when I called the ball on her and I said, you know, as lovingly as we always promised each other that if we ever saw something, we would say it as lovingly as we could. And, honey, you're showing me some signs and symptoms that are quite frankly scaring me to death. You have no middle. And, you know, I think you might have a problem. Awfully chilly in the house the next couple weeks. There's honesty and then there's dial P for pain, you know. But what happened was, because remember I manipulate, it was Lent. Ooh, you know what? For those of you that aren't Catholic, Lent is the 40-day period prior to Easter where you prepare for Easter and you give up something. Hey, honey, let's give up booze. Okay, for me, I really don't care. It's not that big a deal. For her, I could already hear her scratching the walls. She, not growing up in any particular religion, really didn't know what Lent was, so I explained it to her, and she goes, wait a minute, you're not Catholic? I said, I am today. Let's try this and see how it works. And I remember the next day she says, you know how many days are in Lent? I said, yes, 40. She goes, wrong. This week, this time it's 46 because Easter is later in the year. It's later in April. And I'm like, oh, what a shame. I already knew that. And at that time, we were also on a committee for AFG, the Al-Anon Family Group Convention. We were registration. About 1,100 people come to this. And I got to tell you that not everybody who comes to program is well. So when you're doing name tags for 1,100 and you misspell someone's name, it is hysterical to see what type of counter rage you get out of some of these people that are going to meetings. But my wife was at that point just absolutely jonesing, and she was angry, and she was confused, and she didn't know what to do, and she knew she couldn't drink because she had made this promise, but she was just sketching. And at one point I looked over and my wife was absolutely berating some poor 80-year-old woman. And I had to go over there and go, "Hi, I'm really sorry about that. Honey, why don't you go upstairs and take a nap?" You know, and we got through that conference and we came home. And a couple days later, it was Easter. And the day after the day of Easter, I went to work. And there was no booze in the house because we hadn't had anything to drink for the last 46 days. And she found two bottles of red hiding in the back of a cabinet. She hated red wine, but that's all that was there. So she drank both those bottles. And then before she passed out on the couch, she hid one in the bottom of the trash. Because it was okay to see one bottle on the counter, but not two empties in the garbage. And she woke up about 10 minutes before I got home from work. And she said, "Oop, bad news." So she struggled to get upstairs. And she said her duh moment was halfway up the stairs, but she said, "This isn't normal." So the next morning after, there's a whole other story in there about how usually I sleep in because I'm working the PM shift, but that next Monday morning, I played hockey for 40 years, and I had a hockey game that morning. And I went to go get dressed. That means I was up at 6. You know, I had to be over at the rink at 8, you know, be on the ice at 8:30. So my wife is hungover as all get up, and she's trying to do yoga to make it look like she's okay. Hungover and yoga makes hot yoga look really easy. She's everything but puking. And, you know, she "Honey, are you..." As Al-Anon men, we are really... really insecure when our women don't respond to us. "Honey, are you okay? You sure? You seem a little distant." We're scared. You guys scare us. You don't get it. Okay? We can handle anything. I can handle a shootout. I can't handle my woman, you know, not being in sync with me. It's that type of insecurity. And, no, "I'm okay, really." "Okay." And so later on after the game, I went to work, and I'm working Men's Central Jail, 2,000 floor, 2,500 inmates, 20 deputies, myself as the floor supervisor. Call her on the phone. "Honey, you really okay? You really..." Now I'm getting a little insistent. I'm starting to get that angry again. "Honey, you okay? You sure?" She goes, "You know what? There's something we need to talk about, but I can't do it here. I can't do it right now." Okay, now I'm dead in the water. I'm absolutely guilty. Guys, you know what that feeling is I know I've done something wrong. I just got to get her to tell me. I said, "Well, you know, honey, if there's something that you need to tell me, why don't you just toss me an email and we'll see what..." She goes, "Really? Yeah. Okay." So she sent me electronic notification that she thought she was an alcoholic. I should have been an absolute jerk and hit the print button, you know, just for comedy. I remember calling her up saying, "Okay, what do you want to do?" "I don't know. What should we do?" "You want to go to a rehab?" "No, I really don't want to do that." "Well, we should probably put you in touch with my mom and see if we can't get you to a meeting." My mom had that wonderful, compassionate AA response when she called and she says, "I think I may have a drinking problem." She went, "We got another one!" She went to her first meeting that night. As I said before, we were having all kinds of issues trying to get pregnant. 8 days after she quit drinking, she got pregnant. For those of you that have difficulty believing in a higher power, you're agnostic, which, by the way, means you question. It doesn't mean you don't believe. Please tell me how that occurred, because I didn't have anything to do with it. Nothing had changed on my end. And we finally got to do what we had prayed to do. And on December 26, 2004, my little girl was born. And Karina is everything that we asked for. Again, it is not, you know, a trip down the yellow brick road all the time. She is the daughter of an English major alcoholic and a cop. She is already wise beyond her years. She is a detective. We can't get away with anything in that house. It is difficult when your 8-year-old is smarter than you are. And as I talked about this morning, she is into theater. As most parents, my wife and I started her in everything that we thought we would like her to do. Gymnastics. I insisted on jujitsu. Yeah, that was a real good idea. Swimming, because my wife was a competitive swimmer. I said, "No, we're not going to go play hockey. I don't need your face looking like mine." And, you know, but what she fell into was theater. I remember her kindergarten teacher came to us one day and said, "You know your daughter can sing?" I remember looking at her like she had a third eye going, look, the little girl screeching Miley Cyrus from the back seat cannot sing. You know, she has her father's talent for singing. I sing in the shower, water turns off all by itself, okay? And this lady said, no, really, she can sing. She has perfect pitch. And I, being my usual sarcastic self, said, let me guess, you teach singing on the side. Well, as a matter of fact, I do. Yeah, great. I'm not writing any more checks. She said, okay, I'll show you. Gave her a solo in front of 1,100 people at 5 years old. And she walked up to that microphone, and I remember that she turned around to all the kids. Everybody's been to this, right, where all the kids are on the riser, and they're all screwing around, picking their nose, doing whatever they do. And my daughter, in the best Al-Anon or AA manner, I don't know which one it's going to be, turns around to all the kids and goes, and then turns back around and belts out a song that makes her mother and I just bawl. And I remember looking at this woman, Miss Noni, who I instantly wrote a check to and made an appointment for a singing lesson that night, and had to thank her. See, the old me would tell her, you're still not right. You still haven't proved it to me. Instead, I could just enjoy the moment of what my daughter turns out to be very good at. She is a theater kid. She is officially doing the drama that I grew up with, except she gets to do it on stage. And when she starts doing it at home, I call her Liza Minnelli. And this is what God has blessed us with, because we asked. Because our higher power said, you get to be a daddy. And something I never thought I would get. Norm Alpe used to talk about being overpaid. He used to say, I am overpaid. I cannot tell you how much good has come into my life because of these rooms and people like you in it. Because you nurtured me and you put up with me and you allowed me to challenge you and you allowed me to be aggressive and you allowed me to be contrary just because that's what I enjoyed doing. I'm not telling you I don't enjoy it anymore. At the vengeance meeting today, I couldn't run to that meeting fast enough. You know, I'm that jerk that'll sit on the phone with DirecTV to some call center in the Philippines for 6 hours trying to speak Tagalog to these people because they screwed up my bill for $5. I'm that guy. You know, I'm that guy that wants to know the CEO. I'd love to tell you that my travel day yesterday, or the day before, I'm sorry, on Thursday, was just peaceful and serene and birds were chirping, and it just wouldn't be right. Out of L.A. was good. Day started at 2:30 in the morning. Went really well. And, you know, got off the first leg, perfect. Got into Pearson in Toronto. Thought it occurred to me, why did I book myself all the way across the country to come halfway back across the country? But then again, sometimes I don't pay attention. While I'm standing in a line to try and get through security to get to my next flight that is now boarding, the thought occurs to me, I'm not going to make it. Once again, I'm going to miss getting to this conference. God, what is it? Why can't I go to this conference? What's the problem? I remember getting Richard on the phone saying, I may have a problem here. And then I did what only every good Al-Anon would do. I begged. I went to the guy up front and I said, please help me. My flight's boarding. He looks at my phone and goes, oh, yeah, come on with me. Walks me through. No big deal. Doesn't have to be drama. I then run to my gate, which, of course, is the last gate in the concourse. Get to the, you know, and there's no one at the gate except the two, and the door's open. I'm like, I'm just going to barely make it. And I get there, and I'm literally going, and she goes, can I help you? I'm here to board. She goes, we're delayed an hour for mechanical issues. Really? How am I going to react to this? Because this is pretty damn funny. You know what? You get me another plane here right now. You don't understand. I got a meeting tonight in Saskatoon, damn it. We need to get there. You know, once again, what is your choice in this matter? Well, sir, there's not much I can do. There's another plane over there. Just bring it over. Come on, I'm important. Don't you know that? And, you know, 20 minutes later, we were boarding. I said, good job getting that plane. She couldn't stop laughing. You know, and I can't wait to see what it's going to be like getting back through LAX tomorrow. Instead of Tagalog, I get to practice my Spanish tomorrow. And, you know, nobody cries in the house anymore because someone's drunk. Now, like I said, after my mom had another 25-year period of sobriety 30 days ago, she called me and she said, I hate to have to tell you this, but I slipped again. You know, and I just remember giving her a cake 2 months ago. And she said, well, I'm sorry, but I've probably been out for about a good 8 months. Okay. What's our reaction to that? We're going to make it all about me? How dare you? I trusted you. I loved you. You promised me you're never going to do this again? Could have been. Because that's easy to slip back into those old tapes. But it was, you know what? I love you. It doesn't matter whether you're sober or not or whether you draw another sober breath. I hope you go to a meeting tonight. But it doesn't mean I don't love you any less. Because that's what you people taught me to do. That's what you taught me about compassion. That's why I was allowed to eventually be a daddy. That's why I was allowed to eventually have a wife who loves me in spite of the things that I do. I am so overpaid, I cannot even begin to explain to you how I've been blessed with a career for 30 years that I'm just silly in love with. And right now that's probably actually going to end. I have very limited movement because of the surgeries that I've had. I'll probably never work the field again, and I'll probably need to retire. But I got to do this for 30 years, and I know people that never saw 6 months over on what they call the sunny side of the street. And all it means is that it's time for the next season. I have no idea what my higher power has in store for me. You know, everybody thinks it's hysterical after literally 30 years as a street cop in some of the most fun areas of Los Angeles that I'm an elder at my church and I've begun pastoral studies. Maybe that will be the next call. I have no idea. But I'm willing to try. You know, and the people in these rooms will love me through that period too, when I'm crying because I don't have the title anymore. You know, because to some of us, title is still very important. I want to thank you guys so much for having me up here and putting up with me for last year and not getting up here. And I would love to be able to bring my family up here next year because, like I said, I love hard-hitting program. I love that when you're done listening to me bellyache, that you'll hit me dead in the square to face and say, knock it off. You know what you need to do. We love you, but you've got to do it. So I hope that you are well cared for as we all trudge the happy road of destiny. Thank you very much.